Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for bearing with me again yesterday. I got an email from the oncologist's office telling us that we had to be at their office at 7:45. And since I received it on Sunday, there was nobody available for me to speak to on Sunday or Monday, Labor Day, because they were closed. So Spike and I ventured out very early yesterday morning, got to the doctor's office, not a soul to be found. They didn't open until quite a bit after 8 o'clock. When I went in, they said, Mrs. Brewer, your appointment isn't until 10:45. And I said, I know, but thank God for these little modern conveniences called cell phones, because all my emails are on my cell phone. And I brought it up and I showed her what I was sent, because I know in these doctor's offices that if you tell somebody something like this, very sadly, for whatever reasons or whatever else is going on in their lives, they have a tendency to not believe you. So immediately somebody checked into the computer, and of course we ended up being there a couple hours, but when the doctor arrived on site at almost 9 o'clock, Spike was the first person to be seen. And for those of you who do not do Facebook and are not in that world of checking on all of us like we all do with each other, after the PET scan that was taken last week and the most recent lab results, which were yesterday morning, Spike is cancer free, and he's a little bit anemic, so he'll be getting B12 and shots of iron, etc. He's been eating very little meat, and green vegetables still don't taste very good to him. And I think we can build him back up, though. He's gained 5 pounds for the first time in months. And I think he's going to survive this horrific ordeal. So I want to thank everybody for all their well wishes and prayers, etc. So I'd like to mention, because we do talk about this on the show, that even though I let my husband make his own choices, he's 70 years old, he decided he wanted to go through the chemotherapy and the radiation. I'm not sure that would have been my choice for him, but I respect his wishes. We did, however, incorporate many, many things that I know from a more natural lifestyle. One of the things that he got great benefit out of, because the cancer was in his throat, in his larynx, and in his gland on the right side of his throat, there was a tumor. We used frozen aloe. He drank 2 ounces of frozen aloe every morning and every night, and I believe that that helped with the radiation burns a lot. So just a point of fact. I'm going to bring Shelley in because there's all kinds of things going on here in our world in the last couple days that I'd like to, little snippets that I'd like to talk about today. So I'm going to bring Shelley in. But one of the things that has me, I don't know, kind of mystified is this onslaught of sharks. All kinds of sharks coming into the waters here in South Florida. Now, mind you, Florida has always had sharks. Everybody knows that. When I was a child growing up here, I lived here when I was 11 to 17 in Miami. And they tell you right in school, when school started the day after Labor Day back in those days, you were told to be very careful swimming in the ocean, to not wear your jewelry because the silver and the gold shines in the water and a shark might think you were food. And you were also told to never swim at night. I mean, that was a steadfast rule. You never swam at night in the ocean. Good morning, Shelly. I was having a tough time bringing you in. You're in now, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been listening to the show.
Okay. Yeah, I saw you on here, but every time I clicked on the microphone, it just kept working to get you in here. So it just came on a minute ago saying that you were with me. So I found this shark thing very interesting. Now, you've lived here quite a few years now, but you're also not a swimmer.
Right.
Have you paid any attention to all this stuff about all the sharks?
No, but interestingly enough, my niece and her husband, Justin, have recently taken up scuba diving, but deep sea scuba diving. I think he's gone down up to 85 feet now, and they're both getting their licenses and all that. And they told me that then when they go scuba diving, there are sharks that swim around you. And this is something they're taught, because a shark won't just attack you because you're there. And so there's a certain way that you have to swim around them and things like that. But they've both had full-grown sharks swim right in front of them. And she said it was a little surreal the first time it happened, because she said you're like 60 feet below water and you're watching this huge shark that could literally turn its head and you're done. And they're not in cages or anything. So I found that a little chilling. They actually had a picture of one of them, because he, my nephew-in-law, as you would say, he actually has he has one of these thick plastic cases, like 1-inch thick plastic. It's a waterproof case, and he takes his camera down with him, and the controls are on the outside of the box. It's actually a pretty cool setup. Very heavy above water, but in water it's weightless, you know. And he's actually gotten some. He's gotten a couple of videos from their dives, and he's gotten a couple of shots, and two of them were of a shark that was, like, directly in front of him. So it's, you know, shark behavior. If you understand shark behavior, you would be less fearful of them, more respectful of them, because obviously they can kill and maim very easily. They have multiple rows of teeth. So it's, whenever I see these, you know, when they bring sharks up and whatever, and then they show you the inside of the mouth, it is kind of terrifying looking at it, because you know the potential they have to just do severe damage to the body, you know. But in the same token, is that anything else, when you understand them, it really can be safer to be in their habitat.
Well, I have mixed emotions about that, because I tried to find some of the articles that I've read before, and of course, Big Spike loves informative television, and so we've watched lots of videos about shark behavior and animal behavior, and all the different things that you can see today on documentaries. A lot of people dedicate their lives to understanding worlds that are fearful, that we are afraid of, and understanding, of course, brings about less fear. However, one of the things that I've never, ever forgotten on a very, very well-done documentary, this was a long time ago, was the fact that sharks and a few other of our wildlife are totally and completely unpredictable. And there were scientists and people in the in that arena with animals and sea life and all of the above, that found it very difficult to get some real I'm back. Shelly, are you there? Oh, boy. This is crazy.
Can you hear me?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes,
yeah, yeah. I just sent you a text on my other phone because I tried to call on the cell.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't you. My phone lost connection. So on my switchboard. So I figured you were still there, but it lost me that time. That happened last week as well one time. So let me get back into that page because I want to discuss this a little bit because I have so many things I want to talk about, all little snippets of different things. The shark stream in the thousands up South Florida's coast, a sight that might terrify people playing in the surf less than a football field away. From a Cessna 172 flying slowly along the beach, Stephen Kajura videotapes this procession of oceanic predators as they engage in their annual migration from North Carolina. Kajura is an associate professor of biology at the Florida Atlantic University. He's conducting the first systematic study of the migrations of black-tipped sharks, a pattern that has led lifeguards to close beaches and may be linked to increases in shark bites. Every year, we see the same thing, large numbers of sharks off South Florida. We've got this really strong seasonal influx of sharks. They spend the winter here and then go back up north. We've known about this phenomena for years, but no one's ever studied it. The migrations run from roughly Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, to Broward County, or possibly northern Miami-Dade County. The sharks start arriving in December, with numbers peaking in January and February before tapering off. By April, there are very few left in South Florida. They're following their prey, largely schools of mullet. But since February of 2011, Kajura, or a friend, has piloted the Cessna every 2 weeks on a route from Boca Raton to Jupiter Inlet with a video camera mounted on the plane. Back in the office, he analyzes the tapes, counting the sharks and noting their locations.
Wow.
The numbers are shocking. On the strip of ocean he studies, running from shore to about 2 football fields out. He has counted 15,000 sharks on a single trip. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of sharks, Shell. A hell of a lot of sharks. That's
yeah.
A huge of sharks. They're very close to shore. They sometimes right in the surf area, sometimes 30 feet from the shore. If you're sitting in the water, you have an average of 1 shark within 60 feet of you. The sharks are primarily black tips, which reach a maximum length of about 6 feet, big enough to be dangerous. They account for 20% of the unprovoked shark attacks in Florida, tying them with bull sharks as the species responsible for the most attacks. According to the International Shark Attack File at the Florida Museum of Natural History, there are 11 unprovoked shark attacks in 2011 in Florida, the lowest number since 1993. Black tips attack.
Say that again? Say that last stat again?
There were 11 unprovoked shark attacks in 2011 in Florida, the lowest number since 1993.
Wow.
And it's mostly the black tips. And when the murky water allows for a shark to mistake a hand or a foot for a fish, which is what they taught me in high school, such attacks typically take place off central and northern Florida, where the water is murkier and the possibility of errors easier. And that's for the shark. South Florida's water is pretty clear, so the danger of an encounter with a confused black tip is much less. I don't want to cause panic, said Kajura. There's a lot of sharks out there, but the probability of being bitten is very small. Black tip attacks are rarely, if ever, fatal. There are fatal attacks, obviously. The last fatal attack in South Florida took place in 2010 when an 8 or 9 foot
bull or tiger shark killed a kite boarder off of the beaches at Stewart.
Oh, my God.
But what it is it can maim you. It can maim you, and which is, for some people, and this is a matter of opinion and personal reflection, could be worse than being killed. I am thinking of the young girl that they made the movie about, the surfer, who lost her arm. I mean, there are some things, you know, that are worse than the ultimate fact that you leave this world for some people. Not for everybody. Some people.
Yeah, but in her particular case, it's not good to make that comment and then reference that movie, because in that movie she was a survivor. She went on with her life like she didn't lose her arm, you know. But there are shark attacks where people are left paralyzed, where they're gutted, where they have no normalcy to their life. There are certain animal attacks that leave people permanently disfigured or crippled in a way where it's just too difficult for them to, to have a normal life. And we've heard of other attacks from other types of animals that have done that. But there's also people that have been attacked by animals and sharks that have lost legs or arms or whatever, and then just go on with life like it's a little stumble for them. It's amazing. You know, they're able to kind of regroup, take assess of the other faculties, and make the most of the physical strength and dexterity that they're left with from the rest of their body.
Well, that's what I was trying to introduce, is the fact that there are people like her who are amazing. And their love of life and their survival mode is exceptional. And there was a story this morning on the early news about the doctor who's been treating the Ebola outbreak and who became ill and has survived. And they talked about it with Matt Lauer this morning on the news, and he said, you know, he just never gave up his faith. And I think that that's a big part of survivors' modus of operandi, if you will. And but he tells some horrific stories about what happened to him, and of course he is one of those survivors. So, but the shark thing, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because now I have a whole bunch of grandchildren who have said to me, I'm never going in the ocean again, Grandma. And I think what we took from this, the ocean's an amazing healing place. And we certainly talked a lot about the value of the ocean, the sand, the sun, everything about the ocean can be healing. It mm-hmm. makes me feel sad to think that now, because of this thing, although I'm concerned about it, but not for the same reasons, I want to know what's driving sharks in that kind of number so close into shore, because it's not their comfort zone. I want to know the reason why that's happening more than I'm fearful about it. I'm concerned about what could be going out way in the depths of our ocean that's making these sharks come into waters. You know, it's a change. It's a big change. And that's what I question. That's what I'm interested in finding out. But at this point in time, I found nothing that gives any answers except for these few studies.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there isn't any. Is there any speculation, whether it's been confirmed or not? Is there any speculation as to what might be causing that, or they're not even addressing it at all?
And not. I looked at like six different articles, and they all alert you to the issue that excuse me, that it's unusual. They don't really know why it's happening. They think that they're in search of food. and the mullet and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you know, that still doesn't give me any answers. Maybe it would to somebody who knows more about it. Maybe it's because my lack of knowledge isn't hearing, you know, the reasoning behind it. But I didn't. On anything I read, I didn't see anything that said, you know, you don't have to worry, this is just a cycle. I didn't hear any kind of talk like that. The fact of the matter is, to have that many sharks change their lifestyle, so to speak, their behavior, for me, is reason to be concerned. I don't mean afraid,
like,
and I don't mean...
Yeah, like when whales beach themselves, there's always a reason why that happens, you know. And then we generally give assistance to the whales, but I mean that's a tragedy. I mean, why these sharks are coming inland, it means that there's something in the ecosystem that has changed, and like you said, and they're coming in, whether it be for food or fear. You know, there are animals in the water that are bigger than sharks. You know, that they would from. So it's interesting to find out what would be, now, you know, like, where specifically in Florida is this article about? Because, I mean, we're talking what Florida's like, what, 650 feet long or something like that? Is this all the coastal beaches, or is this one particular area they're talking about?
Well, he has been, navigating the Cessna off South Florida coast, and he says that the migrations come from North Carolina to Broward County, and as far as northern Dade County. But he takes the Cessna every 2 weeks on a route from Boca Raton to Jupiter Inlet with a video camera. So that's a small strip of our beach, really, Boca to Jupiter. Boca is about, Sal and I are in West Palm, or I'm in Lake Worth now, but same area. And Boca Raton is probably 20, 25 miles south. And then if you drive to Jupiter, you're talking about like maybe a 45-mile strip.
Yeah,
but they talk about counting 15,000 sharks on one of those little trips.
Oh my God!
And yeah, so that's a lot of sharks. I mean, you know, no matter how you want to cut it, and it shows pictures of just, you know, it's like crowded in the ocean, you know. I mean, it's like crowded there with sharks swimming around each other.
Is there enough food to increase in those kind of numbers? I mean,
well, see, yeah, wouldn't that be one of the things that worried you? Right, what you just said right there isn't that one of the things that would worry you about this? Because, I mean, if you swim in the ocean a lot, I haven't been in the ocean the last year, not one. Well, I've been over at the inlet, but I haven't been in the ocean because I've been having all this other stuff going on, so there hasn't been time for that. But I love the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in water that isn't full of people, last year, me, Josh, Austin, Mikey, Crystal, and AJ are all out in the water. I can touch, but I'm a great swimmer.
Hello, I'm back. Are you there, Shell?
I hung out this time.
You hung up?
Can you hear
me? You did that? Yeah,
huh?
I did. I hear you fine, yeah. But
yeah,
my call was dropped.
I didn't do anything. I just waited.
Oh, okay. Okay. So anyway, we're out there in the ocean just playing and talking and everything, and a fish about 6 inches long flopped right on my chest. Just jumped out of the water and flopped right on my, I mean, we were hysterically laughing about it, but it was very silver, very shiny, and just jumped out of the water and landed right on my chest.
Oh, my God.
And the kids were, like I said, hysterical. So the point I'm making is there's a lot of those little fish, and you'll feel them nibbling at your legs if you're in water that isn't really crowded. If it's got a lot of people in it, they don't seem to be around as much.
Uh-huh.
But when you're talking about feeding 15,000 sharks in a small coverage of water that we're talking about, that is what makes me, I guess, fearful of this.
Well, see, you said something a few minutes ago that I disagreed with a little in a normal context, but I actually agree with it now. And you had said that, you know, like sharks and other animals or sharks are unpredictable and that this was something that's always been. And actually, with a lot of the studies, you know, like with what Justin and Danny are learning right now, actually a lot, we have learned so much about animals' behaviors that it's not so mysterious anymore. However, when you have food sources dwindling or when you have something happening in the ecosystem that is driving animals in hordes, like what's happening with these sharks now, that is when they become unpredictable because they're not going through their day-to-day routine. They're not doing things instinctually. Now they're doing things in a reaction to something else, which is not the normal part. You know, this isn't normal to their habitat. This isn't normal to the way they feed or things like that. So in a particular instance like this, this is very unpredictable because it's something that's out of the norm for how they act instinctually.
And the other thing that we need to take into account when I talk about all the articles that I've read about unpredictability and the documentaries that I've watched about that, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they don't appear to be trainable. You can take a dolphin, a porpoise. You can take a seal. Even penguins do shows at SeaWorld. Even a whale, even an orca whale is a part of a show that is repetitive behavior. They train them to do things at a show. You never see the shark as a star, never. So I think part of that analysis is due to that. You know?
Yep.
But I think that the big thing is that it's still scary whenever we see a whole bunch of changes taking place in our ecosystem, and this would be one of those things. And there is reason to pay attention to it and to be aware of it, I think, especially if you are an avid ocean goer and like the kids. I did a little bit of that as a teenager, lots of snorkeling, but I also did some tank usage in the ocean, and I found the bottom of the ocean to be one of the most peaceful, most serenely beautiful places I've ever looked at. And of course I've been out on a glass bottom boat in the Keys and seen some of the beauty that way as well. I'm very comfortable in the water, so I love it. But this is scary for me. This is scary for me only because it's a big change. And it's unusual to study anything like this and find out that there's not a reason for it. I guess, is my biggest point. There has to be something going on that is changing out there and causing this this kind of a migration. So, but if anybody out there has input on this, we'd love to hear from you. And a lot of you, I know, don't like to talk on the radio or are doing other things, but if you want to Facebook me or call me or email me, you're certainly welcome to do that. The call-in number, if you'd like to call in, though, is 347-989-0352, and you are always welcome at any of the shows to call in and offer your input. So, enough with the sharks, but I think there's we're going to talk about this in the days to come, because I think things are going to circulate that give us more information. The other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit, we're going to talk about the bully workbook tomorrow, because we haven't done the bully workbook in about 3 weeks. And everything I pick up and read, of course, is so much about bullying and so much, so many different arenas. And three of the things that have me bothered is, first of all, the Andrew Wheeler deal, where the kid comes in, says he's invited into a party and beats up on an autistic kid, Aaron, and they show the video on TV. Now, he is being, he was arrested, and he's being arraigned for child abuse. It has been evaluated to not have been a hate crime. In other words, laws change, and this is another arena that is scary as hell. When you talk about circling sharks, this kind of has a connection. Our powers that be in the judicial system can analyze circumstance and change. Like, they decided that he didn't beat him up because he was autistic. So, it wasn't a hate crime. Now, if he beat him up, to me, he doesn't like him very much, right? So,
right.
But now we have this controversy over what kind of charges he's going to be charged with. So they're going to charge him with abusing a minor.
Wow.
Instead of a hate crime, which has different repercussions, different sentencing, different rules and regulations to follow. So there's that's out there that I find to be I don't know, kind of, when you talk about things being surreal, our laws, our ability to make the waters so murky that you don't know which way is up. And, of course, because I've been immersed in murky waters with all the stuff going on with my grandson, I can attest to the fact that in our judicial system, you can't get in murkier waters than that. You can't. Nothing exists except for maybe being in a totally dark room with sunglasses on, maybe. So that's what they're going to charge this young man with, which will be the other thing that's amusing to me, probably a lesser charge. So in our world today, a hate crime is more is more punishable than child abuse. I can't explain any of it. I just know that that's what's going on out there. The other thing...
Interestingly enough, the other charge doesn't go away. So child abuse is child abuse. But when you abuse a child because of a hate crime, because they're different than you, it is an added insult. So it's not that a hate crime is worse than child abuse, it's added on top of it. So the charge of child abuse would still be there, and then the hate crime is added on like a multiplier. Then that's how that works, because I've seen these cases where somebody's charged with hate crime, the underlying crime is still part of what they're what they're going, you know, what they're being charged with, but the hate crime is magnifies it, so to speak. It makes it a worse crime. And if you abuse a child, that's a horrible thing. But if you would abuse a child just because they're different than you, that is worse than just abusing a child. You know what I'm saying? It does heighten it because now there's, you know what I'm saying? It is a worse crime.
Well, that's an evaluation, and you're right, but I don't believe, Shell, that it plays in to the sentencing of the individual charged with the crime. He's being the charge against, it's like manslaughter versus murder, premeditated murder. It's
right.
It's like all these different clauses
degrees
that go into these different charges.
Yeah.
So it won't be about a hate crime. Will it be an underlying factor for other people to pretend that they didn't hear it? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you'd be on the Law and Orders that we watch all the time, and they're in a courtroom, and the judge says, everybody forget that he said that. He wasn't allowed to say that, so forget that he said that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
you're not
who
allowed
really forgets that he said it?
Well, everybody heard it.
Right?
Yeah.
Of
right.
course.
Of course.
But the charges are what carries the prescribed punishment. So, like, if you premeditate a murder, you're going to get, in most cases, in some states, you're going to get the death penalty. In some states, it's just going to be more punishable by time. It all depends on where you are for that. But the charge is what is how the time allotted for the punishment is negotiated.
Right. I mean, was this kid, because, you know, many autistic kids are functional, was this kid friends with these people, or did they just invite him to the party so that they could, you know, harass him or something? I mean, what was the point of inviting him? Was he actually friends with the people that he went to this party with?
Well, that's the other side of this, because now that they're immersed in the charges, the upcoming trial, all that kind of stuff, you won't get a lot of information that's pertinent to the case. It won't be given to the media unless the media makes it up. You won't find anything that actually tells you any more now. I think the stories that we saw in the very beginning, you and I both talked about the story that we saw that said this Aaron showed up drunk at the party and was being belligerent. And one of the other partygoers asked Andrew Wheeler, the one that beat on him, to come take charge of him and get him out of their house. So whether or not we'll ever hear that particular accounting of that night, who knows, because now it's in the system. So
well, see, the bottom line is I see this kind of stuff all the time on excuse me, on the judge shows that I watch. But, you know, you see these type of lawsuits all the time with, you know, like with regular adults that were maybe even friends with each other, where somebody either shows up drunk or gets drunk at a party, becomes belligerent, and instead of calling the police, they take matters into their own hands, somebody gets injured, and then there's a lawsuit. And, you know, and they're
right.
Like, well, he's belligerent, and I had to do something to protect my household. No, you're not allowed, you know, unless the person attacks you, you cannot take physical action against somebody. You know, you have to call the police. Let the police deal with it. But for this kid, because he wasn't being attacked, he was the aggressor. It's just maybe the kid was being belligerent and not leaving, but that doesn't mean that you can just beat the heck out of somebody if they're not threatening you in any way. And I've never heard them say that he was threatening. They just didn't like the way he was acting, you know. And at that point,
right,
you get the police and you have him escorted out. But to injure somebody else that is not threatening you is not permissible.
Well, and that's how the charges will go against him now at this point in time, if it's proven I mean, I haven't heard any comments about checking his alcohol level.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody report, yes, he was under the influence of this, this, and this, or wasn't under the influence of this, this, and this. So, again, we as the public have only got a couple chapters out of this book. We don't have the whole book.
Right, of course.
And chances are we never will have. It will be left up to the six jurors and a judge and the powers that be in regard to this if it gets that far. Now, but the point is that one, what amuses me, well, it doesn't really amuse me, kind of makes me sick to my stomach, is the fact that we can take, we can put more emphasis on a hate crime than we can on child abuse. And honestly, I don't consider, and this is only me, this is only my thought process, I don't consider an 18 or a 19-year-old beaten up on a 16-year-old as necessarily child abuse. I realize the ages mandate that verbiage, but I don't feel that way. I've met 16-year-olds that are bigger, tougher, meaner than 20-year-olds that I know. So I don't, the video is, shows a very aggressive young man pummeling him in the head and him on the floor huddled to protect his face. And then, of course, then I see a picture on Facebook, on social media, showing me a very, very badly beaten face. And then 2 days later, I see him with his family at some kind of a rally to raise awareness for what happened to him. And I saw nothing on his face. So, you know, it is what it is. And, of course, with social media.
But, you know, some people are embarrassed by that kind of stuff. Is it possible that he put on, you know, maybe something to cover it up or something? I mean, I know people that do that kind of stuff because they get embarrassed. You know, the fact that you didn't see bruises a couple days later doesn't mean that he didn't have any, although in the video I never saw him hitting his face. I only saw him hitting the back of his head.
Right. Well, the picture that was on Facebook, Shell, looked like somebody went through the windshield of a car.
Wow. I wonder
yeah.
what all that was.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, lips stitched, eyes, cheekbones, everything. There's no way in hell somebody could look okay even 10 days later.
So, and it was this kid?
It was supposed to be, yeah, it was supposed to be a picture of Aaron after he was beaten at the party. And I don't know. I don't know.
See, this is problems with media, social media, things like that. Because people can take photos and Photoshop them and make them look any way they want, it's so difficult to really ever get a true sense of what's going on in a situation unless you are part of it. And one of the things that see, and this is why I take everything I hear in the news with a grain of salt. I hear it. I have a I have a reaction to it, but I stay reserved a little bit because it's like, if in fact these are the actual facts, then this is how I think about it. I don't make an ironclad reaction ever because sometimes a year or two later, when the facts finally come out, the court case is over, you find out the situation was totally different than you were being led to believe in the beginning. And I think this is one of the problems with our media in this country, because what they do is they have like ratings wars. So they snatch up as many facts as they can. They throw it out in their paper because, you know, they're trying to be sensationalistic. They want people to read their paper, you know. And then as time goes on, and like you said, it gets to court, now no facts are coming out anymore because now both sides are reserving their facts so that they can present it to a jury. So now nothing is going to the media anymore. And then you never hear anything more about that story. And then years later, when the court case is over and the facts finally come out, you find out that in the beginning there were dozens of things that you that made you believe the situation was one way, and then you find out it was something very, very different, you know, or that there was more contributing factors on one side or the other, making the guilty person seem less guilty or the innocent person seeming less innocent or something like that, you know. So, and this happens so, so often. It's one of the issues with our media. I wish the media would present things with more feasibility, like saying, you know, this is what we've been told so far. However, other sources say this. We're going to have to wait to see. And plant some of the alternate scenarios out there so that people don't just run amok. People hear these stories. They hear how it's being presented. And then they make decisions on a particular type of person or a particular family. Innocent families have been threatened when it turns out that their loved one had nothing to do with a particular case. But meanwhile, they had to suffer through all these threats and everything for years because the media made it sound like they did something. And then the person gets acquitted, but meanwhile, their family had to live for years with threats and everything. So it's mm-hmm. one of my frustrations with how our media handles things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the truth. I mean, it is what it is, but that's what has happened, and that comes from everybody being able to say what they believe, everybody being able to portray an incident from their point of view, and even if that means they get to embellish. Then they get to embellish. And that's what's scary for the rest of us to be able to make a really, really bona fide, evaluation of what we read and see and hear. I think there's a lot of news shows that are on TV today that are great. Meet the Nation, 60 Minutes. Some of those shows are attempt to be truthful to the point, and you know, done with professionalism and decorum,
right.
And respect, right. And that's what I appreciate. I I've read The Inquirer all my life. Why? Because it makes me laugh, not because I take seriously anything I read in the National Enquirer or any of the other magazines like that. I just find them to be foolish. My heart often aches for celebrities because they're absolutely positively the biggest fodder for any of those kind of magazines. They get raked over the coals on a regular basis. But I think that now to get this, just what we watched, what we saw for real, Andrew Wheeler deserves to be punished in some way. What led to that is irrelevant because of what we saw when somebody retreats to a fetal position with their hands over their head, they've given up. To keep pummeling on somebody who's like that shows lack of control, and there's issues that Andrew Wheeler needs to work through, in my opinion. But what led up to that, what he did to deserve being disliked so much, we'll probably never know. We'll probably never really know because everybody else, even everybody at this so-called get-together, is going to have a different point of view of what happened. So the truth, as usual, can be incredibly evasive, you know, to the point of no return. So, and then the other thing that I see in real life is when somebody gets told the story so many times, even if they were there, they believe the other rendition, Shell.
Yeah, I've seen that kind of stuff happen also, that exactly what you just said, and that's one of my frustrations. That's why, if nothing else, what I would recommend people to do, you know, it's helpful to understand what happens in the world, because when you see things happening in society, it's a symptom of something bigger. When you see these types of things happening all over the country in different families and different schools and different workplaces, you know, That means that there's something happening to us as a society. And if we don't pay attention and take steps to turn the tide again, it gets worse. But my recommendation to people is to, when you hear these stories, don't instantly take one side or the other. You know, take it in, be aware. It's very, very important to be aware of what's going on around you. But be reserved as to your reaction and making somebody a bad guy and somebody a good guy until all the facts come out. Because a lot of times what happens is people will make judgment calls on a particular type of person or, in a particular area, and then they find out years later they have this attitude towards something or someone for a very long time that turned out to be unwarranted. So people, and so many people today, I think most people will jump to react just based on the initial information that comes out. And even though it's been proven over and over and over again, that a lot of times it's not accurate.
Well, that's for sure. And again, you know, it's like that old, the old game where you whispered something in somebody's ear and by the time it got to the other end of the room, it was a totally different scenario. Things don't change. And the more times a story gets told, the more it changes. So I do think, though, that a lot of this kind of stuff has gotten to be, I'll say something that I said very, very early on when we first started the show. Our laws, our interpretation of our laws are antiquated beyond repair.
Yeah.
But I don't know who's out there, what's out there. Maybe it's a giant computer someplace that could analyze the way things are set up and make those kind of changes. I don't know. But because we still live by them in a court of law, there needs to be some changes. There needs to be things that no longer pertain to our world as it is today. You know, you and I have dredged up many, many things. I never will let go of the week that we did mental illness and talked about how back in the day husbands would, trade their wives for a horse or you know, talk about beating their wives to get them to make better meals or whatever. That's true stuff.
That's right.
That really happened. And sadly, the laws that went with that in these two horse towns are still in the books. Probably,
I know, isn't that
not
amazing?
All of them. Yes. Because nothing ever got cleaned out. Nobody ever cleaned house and said, this doesn't pertain to us anymore. We can't say that anymore. Women have equal rights. Blacks have equal rights. Children have rights. So a lot of these things no longer pertain to any of the things that we deal with on a regular basis. Really quickly, because we're down to 4 minutes, I want to mention that if you live in this vicinity and if you are a Home Depot shopper, which most of you are, the Home Depot here on 441, what's called Royal Palm Beach, it has been... There has been a breach in their credit card and debit card department again.
Wow.
And like what happened at Target during the holidays. And if you have shopped at that Home Depot, you need to immediately have a look at your accounts, your debit card accounts and your credit card accounts. If you've charged something and there's other things charged, all the things that you know that you should be looking for that may not be your transactions, and report it right away. It was on the news very, very early this morning, and I've seen it a couple more times on local news while we've been on the show. So that's the one, the Home Depot that is, I think, on 441 and Southern. But I'm not positive. So if you went to what they said was Royal Palm Beach and 441. So if you've been in any of those Home Depots that are on 441 in this stretch, I would check all my information and make sure that your account has not been hacked in any way. So,
wow.
And they're talking about a lot of money. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's so many contractors out there that do all, you know, to remodel a house. They purchase
mm-hmm.
it all at Home Depot. I mean, this could be extraordinarily hazardous to a lot of different people. And so please pay attention if you've shopped there recently and check all your accounts. Tomorrow we're going to do Bullies to Buddies Day, but one of the things that I want to pull into the Bullies to Buddies Day is what's happening with our friend Carrie and Gentle Care. We talked about this story months ago. And Camden, the child in question, was given back by the foster parents and is in he's in a foster home that doesn't want to keep him for the rest of his life. He had some health issues after he was born. His mother is fighting every day in court to get this child back, and in essence, Gentle Care is holding him hostage,
yeah.
And is name calling to his birth mother instead of going with factual information and doing the right thing, which is another problem with our world today. So we're going to talk about bullying, and this is bullying at its highest height as far as I'm concerned. So please join us. Shell and I will, as I said, be back tomorrow, and we'll do the bully workbook, but we'll kind of link it to what we're going to talk about Friday, and hopefully I can get Carrie to say a few words or one of her associates. They've done a lot of things to work through this, and I think the word fairness comes to my mind all the time, but it means so many different things to so many different people that I guess it's no longer applicable in our world today, the state of fairness. So God bless everybody. Have a great, great day. Thanks for all the wonderful positive comments on Facebook in regard to my husband's health. He's a trooper. So is my son, Michael. They're both on the mend. So thanks a lot. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rain. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Talk to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.